Welcome to GovInnovator. I'm Andy Feldman. The topic today is implementing evidence-based grant programs. We're joined by Evelyn Kapler, who oversees the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Here's a clip.
There's constant contact between our project officers and our grantees, and it has to be that way. We've basically thought about our project officer work more as coaching than as really monitoring. We really want to know, are there challenges, issues people are facing when they implement these programs in the real world? And how do we help them think through some solutions? And that's been essential. That's another one of the elements that you need for an evidence-based program, is that good working relationship to realize that how a program might have been implemented in an ideal setting is not the same when you hit the real world.
Because a significant portion of federal dollars flow to states and localities in the form of grants, if you want to make government more outcome and evidence-focused, you need to make grant-making more outcome and evidence-focused. An important effort to do that within the last roughly 5 years has been the launch of tiered evidence or innovation fund grant designs in the federal government that focus resources on practices with strong evidence behind them, while also promoting new and innovative practices. One of the best-known examples, and one of the first to launch in 2010, is the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program, and the focus of our interview today. We're joined by Evelyn Kapler, who's the director of the Office of Adolescent Health at HHS. In her role, she oversees the $110 million TPP program. It's designed to reduce teen pregnancy through the replication of evidence-based program models and also through research and demonstration projects. It's been cited as a leading example of evidence-based grant making, including by the U.S. Office of Management and Budget. Evelyn, welcome.
It's wonderful to be with you.
Give us an overview of the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program and how the tiered evidence concept is applied to it.
Well, in the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program, it's a competitive grant program. And the majority of our funding, about 75%, is specifically dedicated to replicating evidence-based approaches. And that means approaches that have been proven to have positive impacts based on rigorous science. And then the second tier is for supporting the implementation and testing of new or innovative approaches to teen pregnancy prevention. And about 25% of our funds is available for testing new and innovative approaches.
So listeners to this podcast may be familiar with tiered evidence grant programs like I3, Investing in Innovation at the U.S. Department of Education, which has three tiers: development, validation, and scale-up. The TPP, in contrast, as you just noted, has two tiers: one for the replication of evidence-based programs that HHS identifies. In other words, grantees can choose from one or more programs in the database that HHS has created. And 75% of TPP grant dollars flow to that tier, with grants ranging from $400,000 to $4 million apiece. Then the second tier is for the implementation of demonstration programs to develop and test new ideas and innovative strategies. Those grants range from $400,000 to $1 million. Tell us how HHS develops the database of evidence-based approaches from which grantees can choose for that first tier.
We've identified approaches through a systematic review. We do that in partnership with the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation. And it's a two-step process. Essentially, what's the rigor of the science, and then demonstrating positive outcomes. Those programs then are eligible for potential funding through our program. The other element that we found critical for successful implementation is whether or not those evidence-based approaches are implementation ready. Meaning, is there a curricula? Are there training materials? Are there tools for measuring fidelity in the implementation of the program model? So it's not only the science, but it's the readiness to be implemented and the practical tools for communities to use.
It's not just that they've been shown to work, these initiatives, it's also that they're implementation ready.
It's very practical. Our ultimate goal here is to provide the best available science to communities in working with teens. So if there aren't implementation materials, it's very difficult for a community to actually implement the program.
And tell us about the second tier that's testing out newer and less proven approaches. Tell us about the rationale for having that tier.
Well, our goal here is both to build the evidence and to support innovation. To do that, we've got to dedicate funds. so that we can assist people in both implementing and evaluating new and innovative approaches. And I think you'll see this year in a set of new funding opportunity announcements that we've just released, we've even gone a step further. Many times there are creative ideas, promising practices that aren't really fleshed out and ready to be rigorously evaluated. So we're looking to fund intermediaries to help bring those ideas to a place where they're ready to be fully evaluated and build the evidence even further.
So the new effort is going to help pilot approaches so that they can be rigorously evaluated, just like the rest of the initiatives in that second tier. And next, tell us about the evaluation requirements for the first tier, where grantees are replicating approaches with evidence behind them. Even though there is evidence behind those approaches, am I right that there's an evaluation requirement for those grantees so that you can deepen the research base on that approach?
There is. Those projects that receive a larger amount of funding each year have a requirement to do a rigorous evaluation, utilizing the same standards that are in the evidence review. Many of the program models that have been identified through the HHS evidence review only have one evaluation study behind them. We want to build the evidence by replicating programs and seeing if we're having the same kinds of outcomes with that program model. So continued evaluation is key in the program.
So Evelyn, give us an overview of what it takes to run an evidence-based grant program like this, a tiered evidence grant program.
I think you need to think carefully about your staff. Staff who are monitoring these kinds of programs need grounding in both delivering services in a variety of community settings. They need to understand the theory and the logic model behind an evidence-based program model. And they also have to have a commitment to implementation science and program evaluation. This really is different work than is done in traditional grant programs. It also takes intense technical assistance and training for grantees. It's basically a partnership between the government funder and the grantee work. We want to ensure that our grantees have a pilot period, some milestones to know whether they can actually scale up and implement their programs with fidelity. I think performance monitoring systems are key. Are we collecting data about key outcomes, the progress of the work? And are we using that for continuous program improvement? We need to look at issues around fidelity in the program. Is the program being implemented with fidelity and with quality? We also want to look at issues around rigorous evaluation standards. Do our grantees understand the standards that we're using in the TPP program? We have put that in as a grant condition for our grantees. I think when we're looking at innovations, we also need to provide guidance and assistance to our grantees about how they package their programs. The ultimate goal here is to make that information available to communities. It goes back to that whole question about implementation readiness. And then finally, because we're in a government grant structure, we need to think about sustainability. These are 5-year projects. At the end of these projects, are we working with our grantees to ensure that they have thought through ways in which to sustain this evidence-based work in their community in the absence of federal funding or decreased federal funding?
And in terms of staffing, how might it be different from a more traditional grant program?
I think there's a different skill set. There is a science to implementing evidence-based programs. It is a very close and intense relationship between our project officers and our grantees. I think there are considerations about evaluation, understanding how evaluation, both the implementation evaluation and the impact evaluation, needs to be designed. I think it's important to have conversations with the original developers. It's a 3-way process, the funder, the grantee, and the original program model developer. That's an important conversation to make sure that programs are being implemented with fidelity and with quality, and to keep the developer in that whole process as well.
And am I right that this approach, you can't do what some grant programs in government do, which is to have 100 grants, let's say, per grant officer? This is much more intensive work. You can't do it in a ratio that large.
You can't. We've got 18 staff. They have large portfolios. They carry between, because these aren't the only grants they manage, they carry between 10 to 20 projects apiece. I mean, ideally, it would be, off the top of my head, 10 given the intensity of the work, but that's just not how it is.
Right. And speaking of the intensity of the work, that involves developing a close relationship with grantees in a way that's unlikely to occur in a traditional grant program.
There's constant contact between our project officers and our grantees, and it has to be that way. We've basically thought about our project officer work more as coaching than as really monitoring. We really want to know, are there challenges, issues people are facing when they implement these programs in the real world? And how do we help them think through some solutions? And that's been essential. That's another one of the elements that you need for an evidence-based program, is that good working relationship to realize that how a program might have been implemented in an ideal setting is not the same when you hit the real world. Youth may not be attending the program. Well, maybe because there's a conflict with some other event in the community. Teachers may not feel empowered to implement the evidence-based program because they have a preference for another approach. So there's a lot of training, technical assistance, coaching necessary to ensure that they're implementing it the way it was intended to be implemented, and that a project isn't kind of veering off with their own adaptations that will affect how this program should actually be implemented.
One of the reasons that staff are working closely with programs, am I right, is that they need to monitor and ensure that there's fidelity of the model being implemented. In other words, that programs are actually undertaking the critical elements of a program model that has the evidence behind it. Fidelity is a key issue here, am I right?
Absolutely. To ensure implementation with fidelity, we found that it was critical to define what that meant and to set up a system for monitoring, analyzing, and using fidelity data so that we could make continuous program improvements. The requirements for implementing programs with fidelity also vary by program model, and that means that both grantees and our staff have to have a thorough understanding of each evidence-based model. We also implemented a performance data collection system that collects and analyzes data on two fidelity measures. One looks at facilitator-reported adherence, and the other is independent observer adherence, which gives us information about whether activities have been implemented as intended, and we get that information each year from our grantees. The other key piece is having grantees understand the value of that data for their own program use, and that they own it, and they actually use it as they're monitoring the fidelity in the implementation of their programs.
That's interesting. It's not just the staff playing an oversight role, it's also them training programs to use the data that programs are producing.
Absolutely. If they see the data every year and it's a little off, they can talk with their project officer, make adjustments. What's happening here? The good news is that our performance data is showing really good fidelity in our program implementation. That's important to us. It's important to each individual grantee as well.
It seems important in a program like this that grantees or applicants have the expectation that they're not just going to be receiving funding, but they're also going to be receiving coaching and have a careful eye on them around fidelity.
And that was a difficult concept for grantees to understand and accept. But as we've moved through the program, we've seen that they see the value of measuring fidelity in their work, in their own program improvement. We developed tools for their use, trained them on the use of those tools, and I think it's been essential in the successful implementation of these evidence-based programs.
We'll end this portion of the interview here, but I'm going to ask Evelyn more about how they measure fidelity and also about the systematic review process to identify evidence-based approaches, and I'll post her answers to the blog. But for now, my thanks to Evelyn Kapler from HHS for a very useful overview of the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program, and thanks for listening.